On Wednesday, the Justice Minister, Alan Shatter, published new guidelines concerning the issue of surrogacy. And to discuss this, I'm joined in studio by David Quinn of the Iona Institute and from Cork by lecturer and lawyer Deirdre Madden. Good morning to you both. David, you have reservations about these guidelines. What are they?
Well, basically, the guidelines and, in fact, the debate so far about surrogate motherhood and just generally AHR, which is to say assisted human reproduction, hasn't properly considered some of the kind of ethical concerns that other countries have and have enshrined in their laws. And in the area of surrogate motherhood, for example, there's the concern about exploitation of poor women in countries like India. And it's, almost invariably, comparatively well-off people essentially renting the wombs of much worse-off women. And like in the States, it's often sort of working class women essentially, renting their rooms to middle class women and men. And the second concern is something Germany, Austria and Italy brought up in a recent case that went before the European Court of Human Rights, because Austria, Germany, Italy and a few other European countries, in fact, forbid surrogacy entirely because of the ethical concerns. And Germany said, look, when you have a birth mother, who would be the surrogate mother, and you have an egg donor who would be the genetic mother, Germany says this splits motherhood. And if you split motherhood, and the way Germany put it in that case was the resulting ambiguity of the mother's identity might jeopardise the development of the child's personality and lead to considerable problems in his or her discovery of identity.
How did they cope with adoption in that situation where someone has a birth mother and has an adoptive mother?
Well, you see, adoption is completely different in that the child already exists and the child is in need of a home. And everybody would agree that a child who has been abandoned or whatever the case may be and is in an orphanage, everybody agrees that child needs a home. OK, but nobody thinks it's ideal that the child is not brought up by its natural parents, that it's seen as adoption is seen as next best thing. But the child already exists, whereas with AHR quite often and surrogate motherhood, it is deliberately intended that the child be separated from the birth mother, even though it often is given then to the genetic mother.
The German reservation and therefore forbidding surrogacy is that it splits motherhood. Under these guidelines,
well, this hasn't come up at all as a concern. I mean, basically, the guidelines are saying, here's what the law is, and if you go abroad and you come home with a child, here's essentially how you can get your passport and what your rights are or not, and who gets recognised as the legal parent. But in the debate and the sort of things that government spokespeople have been saying so far, these sort of ethical concerns haven't been flagged at all. And it just seems extraordinary to me that they haven't been flagged.
All right, Deirdre Madden, what do you make of those reservations? First of all, an ethical matter, which might or might not ever be written into a law, but there is a concern that it's rich people getting poor people to have babies for them.
Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, dear.
Firstly, can I just say that I certainly welcome the attempt to clarify a very complex area of family law, because there are lots of couples in Ireland who've had children through surrogacy and who are in a legal limbo as a result of the failure to legislate for surrogacy. And I think in the guidelines they state that the authorities will take a child-centred approach, and I think that's very much to be welcomed as well.
Just to clarify the law at the moment, the birth mother, the woman who actually produces the child, irrespective of the genetic material that goes into the formation of that child, that's the mother.
Correct. And I think that's one of the problems with the guidelines, and I would have a few reservations about the way in which they're formulated. But one of the points is that legal parentage is assigned on the basis of genetics for the man, but gestation for the woman. So the surrogate mother, the birth mother, is the legal mother. And that means there's no basis for the commissioning woman to establish a legal link with the child, even if she is the genetic parent, whereas the genetic father can apply for paternity and guardianship on the basis of his genetic relationship.
So in theory, a surrogate mother who is not the genetic mother of the new baby would have to offer that baby up for adoption.
Well, again, that's another problem with the guidelines. There is no mention of adoption or where surrogacy fits into the adoption framework that we have in Ireland.
But in law, in order for this whole thing to be clarified, at the moment, the birth mother would have to say, OK, I'm the mother of this baby because I gave birth to this baby. So therefore, if I want to give it to Mr. and Mrs. A, I have to put the baby up for adoption.
And there are two difficulties with that under the current adoption law. One would be if money was paid to the surrogate mother, and that doesn't happen in all surrogacy cases, but in a lot of them it does. If money has been paid, then that's a criminal offence in relation to adoption. And also private adoption, where one person agrees to give a child up for adoption to a specific other named couple, that's also banned by the adoption legislation, other than in circumstances where the child is genetically related to the couple.
The situation where, for example, there is also egg donation, that's even more complicated. I mean, if it is the person who can't have a baby herself, but whose eggs are fine, but hasn't been able to retain a pregnancy, for example, and then this is implanted in the other mother's womb, what's the situation there? Because then you have the genetic material in one case is fine, but if the new surrogate mother provides the genetic material herself, her egg, what then?
Well, and that can very easily happen, because a woman may, for example, be unable to carry a pregnancy because she's had a partial hysterectomy or has had repeated miscarriages, and she will not be regarded as the legal mother of her own genetic child unless there is some mechanism by which she can adopt the child.
And in the second case, where the father provides the sperm, the prospective father, but the egg is provided by somebody else, either a third party or by the surrogate mother.
Yes.
What then?
The surrogate mother is always the legal mother, according to these guidelines, and the genetic father, who can provide DNA tests to establish his parentage, can apply for paternity.
David and yourself seem to be agreed that what has come out is not enough.
Well, I think certainly that because there's no mention of adoption, and because of the way in which the legal parentage is assigned under these guidelines, they're using existing family law concepts and principles to disentangle very complicated relationships, and I think it's not enough.
Well, I mean, this is, you know, the situations being created by the likes of surrogate motherhood and so on is not to be treated simply as a legal problem to be solved by, you know, making it easier to facilitate surrogate motherhood and so on. I mean, Deirdre, in what she said there, hasn't addressed the ethical concerns about the possibility of exploitation, and the German, Austrian, Italian concerns about, you know, what do you do? You know, what happens when you split motherhood? I mean, Pat there was talking about how extremely complicated this whole area is when you've got egg donors, sperm donors, surrogate mothers, and so on and so forth. And there was a paper out recently in the States called One Parent of Five. Some people say maybe up to five names could go on a birth cert.
Well, I'm just thinking, just to clarify, you could have someone who's had a vasectomy and therefore... Yeah. And still wants to somehow have a family, and therefore they have to get a sperm donor.
Mm-hmm.
And then you might have an egg donor and then a surrogate mother.
Absolutely.
That's three. And then the two people who want to have the baby ultimately, that brings it up to five.
Yeah.
And that means in those circumstances, Pat, in that example, the commissioning couple wouldn't be recognised as the legal parents at all.
But you see, what has to be asked, though, is, and we're all agreed, I mean, this has to be dictated along the lines of what's in the child's best interest, because obviously there's great pain involved in infertility and people can often go to great lengths to have children, but it can't be completely open-ended, and it has to look at what are the rights of the child and what's proper and right for the child, which is why countries like Germany, Austria, Italy, etc. are so nervous about this whole area and simply ban surrogacy outright. And in fact, also insist that any child brought into the world using IVF has to use, in some cases, both the sperm and the egg provided by the commissioning couples themselves and not third parties, because there's now, as you know yourself, Deirdre, thousands of people grown up into adulthood who were produced by either sperm donation or egg donation or both, seeking out their parents, seeking out their half-siblings, and their voices haven't been sufficiently heard in this debate. In fact, Pat had such a person on the show a couple of years ago who's fought for the rights of donor-conceived children, and her name was Joanna Rose.
Can I come in there, Pat?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think I just want to address the two points that David has mentioned about exploitation and the splitting of parenthood. Certainly there are concerns about the potential exploitation of impoverished women who may not be adequately advised in relation to their legal rights, but I don't think that prohibiting surrogacy that has been going on under the radar for decades, and most countries have found that prohibition of surrogacy doesn't work, it only drives the practice underground or it leads to an increase in tourism, and the approach that was recommended by the Commission on Assisted Reproduction is that we shouldn't stick our heads in the sand by pretending surrogacy is going away, but we should regulate it and to try to ensure that the negative aspects of the practice are avoided as much as possible.
Yeah, that's the lowest common denominator approach.
Can I also come back to the issue about the splitting of the genetic and social motherhood? And Pat mentioned, of course, that that this already happens in the form of adoption for many years, which is analogous, though not the exact same.
Far from it. In
terms of child psychology, genetics is not necessarily the key to good parenting. It's the quality of parenting is what's important. Genetic relationship is not necessary for this.
Child psychologists will always
say that it's evidenced by warm, loving, supportive relationships between parents and their children, as we see with adopted children and their families
There's a complete contradiction in your position there, Deirdre. Because, you know, what you're saying is the natural tie shouldn't matter all that much to the child, but so many parents who want to avail of IVF, etc., insist on trying to use their own egg and sperm because they think the natural tie matters immensely to them. And so they only use egg and sperm donation as an absolute last resort. So we have all these parents saying the natural tie matters to us, but apparently the natural tie isn't supposed to matter a bit to children. And most people listening to that programme actually know perfectly well that the natural tie matters an awful lot, that they prefer to raise their own genetic children, and children prefer to be raised by their own genetic parents where possible. And as we also know from the experience of adoption, children very often go looking for who their birth parents are, even if they were very happily raised by their adoptive parents.
And I
they
do
still
agree
go
with
looking
that.
For that.
And I do think, and the Commission also said, that it is in the best interest of the child to be able to identify its genetic parents if it so wishes. And to that end, a child born as a result of surrogacy should be able to find out who the surrogate mother was. That sort of openness is clearly advocated in most countries and advocated in relation to adoption for the same reasons.
Can I just finish the point, please?
In relation to the best interest of the child, I'd just say, why can the child not be regarded as the child of the woman raising him or her, who would be, for example, the commissioning woman, who may also be his or her genetic parent? How is it in the best interest of the child being raised by a woman as his or her own? How is it in the best interest of the child not to be regarded as the legal child of that woman?
You know, I mean, it's like, do you think the natural tie matters at all, Deirdre?
No, can you answer the question that I asked?
Well,
how is it in the best interests of the child not to have a legal relationship with its genetic mother who is raising it and who intended to bring it into this world and to love it and care for it as her own?
For the parents who have so far used surrogacy, okay, and have gone to countries like India, I think special arrangements should be made to facilitate them being recognised as legal parents. But I think from then on we should embark upon the German, Austrian and Italian path. Because of the problems of identity that are created by the likes of surrogacy and splitting motherhood.
But David, research on children conceived through surrogacy has found no negative effects on the quality of parenting or the well-being of children, whether or not there's a genetic link.
That research is in its very early stages.
Does any country insist on giving information to the child as that child grows on the surrogate mother who actually gave birth, even though they might have no genetic tie whatsoever to that child? Or is that literally seen as rent a womb, a temporary arrangement which then has no tie to the family? Or is there any reason, and indeed, is there any reason why there should be that tie?
It seems to vary from country to country. Some countries, the surrogate mother is cut completely out of the picture and is not to be traced. And in other countries, so far as I know, at some point the child has a right to be told how they were brought into the world.
Even though there may be no genetic link between the child and that surrogate mother?
Well, do you see, I mean, it is truly relevant to the child to know, this was my birth mother, this was my genetic mother. And again, this is why the principle in Austrian law is the mother must always be certain. And that is why, again, you know, they ban it. And by the way, the Austrian law was upheld by the European Court of Human Rights as not being in violation of the European Convention on Human Rights.
Is there a case, though, Deirdre and David, you might be able to tell me this, you know, to be German is to be born of German parentage and not necessarily to be born in Germany. Is that part of what this is all about?
Well, I can't speak for Germany, but I'm sure that's not the Italian law, and I don't know what the Austrian law is. But, I mean, it doesn't take away from the basic principle from which those laws are operating in, which is they are concerned the splitting motherhood creates identity issues for the child.
Deirdre, then finally, what more is needed in your view?
Well, I think what should happen, Pat, is that because of the vulnerability of children who were born in these circumstances and the absence of legislation clarifying it, I think that there should be more adequate legislation introduced which would cover all of assisted reproduction. It's a very complex area, and I don't think surrogacy is going to go away. I think it should be dealt with as part of a larger regulatory framework for fertility treatments in general and not just take little pieces of it, as with these current guidelines, and not consider how they fit into other areas of fertility treatment.
And I think our government should look to countries like Italy, etc., and see what they're doing.
OK, on that note, thank you both very much for joining us. David Quinn of the Iona Institute and joining us from Cork, lecturer and lawyer Deirdre Madden.